far as I know, it's a true one. Oh, we dropped more bombs and fired more artillery in Vietnam than we did in all of World War II in Korea. That's probably true. Did you ever think about that? Dresden, Germany. We bombed it, leveled that city, and killed 230,000 people. That's nearly three times as many people as died in Hiroshima. We did the same to Hamburg. Did the same to Tokyo. 300,000 people died in Tokyo from conventional bombing. Can you imagine how many people would have been left alive in Hanoi if we'd have dropped all that bombs on Hanoi? Where'd the bombs drop? In the jungle. Dropped them in the jungle. We used to call it the mosquito control. All they were doing was killing mosquitoes and a few baboons and any others were up there. Friend of mine, we'd been in the amphibious forces together when I was chief of staff. He was my operations and training officer. When they disbanded the amphibious forces because we were about to defeat North Vietnam, and that was not supposed, so November 1969, we got orders from Washington to disband the amphibious forces. See, in amphibious forces, you can pick where you're going to hit. When you're on the beach, you just sort of wait till they hit with the constraints we were under. Ernie told me that he had to fire. He was now the regimental commander of the artillery regiment, 1st Marine Division, 3rd Marine Division. 1st had already been pulled out. Because he told me, he said, you know, I have to fire 6,000 rounds of heavy artillery every 24-hour period, whether I have a target or not. Good for DuPont, you know, Rocky Childs, Rockefeller Rothschilds. And to create the illusion that we can't win the wars of liberation, national liberation. Well, close the shipping channel, and that's nothing then. You just sit and wait. That's what the Indians used to do. That's what they did over in Israel. They'd put Jerusalem under siege, cut off its water and its food, and just wait. So if you cut off their armaments, nothing. And you just wait and start creating a government and all that and go about your business. But we weren't allowed to close Haiphong. We weren't even allowed to bomb their supply depots outside of Hanoi. And we had pictures of them. We were not allowed to bomb or destroy the surface-to-air missile sites. General Lavelle, three-star general, commander of the B-52 forces in Vietnam, without authority from Washington, D.C., sent a strike of B-52s out and destroyed 36 surface-to-air missile sites, and he was Mr. Lavelle 10 days later. Kicked him right out of the Air Force. Sickening. Well, you might ask, and I might forget to answer the question, I knew we weren't going to win the war in Vietnam when I went, because I'd figured this out from Korea. People would ask, well, why did you stay in knowing you couldn't win or weren't going to be allowed to win? Well, first off, I just wanted to see how we would be prevented from winning when it was so simple. And I stayed in after I saw we weren't going to be able to win and how we weren't going to be able to win, because as chief of staff of the amphibious forces, I could save a lot of lives. Because you put some commander in there who thinks he's really going to win the war, he can kill a lot of folks trying to take real estate that you know you're never going to hold. But he would think he was going to hold it. And I did. I saved a lot of lives. Like the commandant of the Marine Corps, at a staff meeting, actually wept. A four-star general weeping. And his chief of staff put his hand on his shoulder and said, Wally, why don't you quit? He said, I can't, because I don't know who those SOBs would put in here to replace me. That's right. See, once you leave an organization, you've lost your influence. I had seen six admirals and generals and about 50 colonels resign in disgust under McNamara, and they each one individually calls news conferences to tell why they were resigning, and nobody comes. But let Jane Fonda have a news conference, they'll all be there. She should have been shot as a traitor, along with a bunch in the State Department. Well, how did they keep us from winning? First off, you couldn't close Haiphong Harbor. We said, okay, we'll have a quarantine, a naval quarantine. You see, a naval blockade is an act of war. But Kennedy had quarantined Cuba. The quarantine was, it's still the same, but it's a different name. All he did was, he said he'd let the Soviet ships through with supplies, but no war supplies, and we reserved the right to board the ships and see if they had war supplies. And when he announced that, there were immediately 16 or 17 Soviet ships turned around and went home. Well, that's what we want to do there. But McNamara and Dean Rusk, and Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, both said, "Nyet." Had you heard the joke about the other day that after all the bugs in Washington, the Soviets bugged our embassy and all that over there, and Mr. Reagan was taking a bath, as the joke goes, and he said, "I wonder if this bathroom is bugged," and his rubber duck said, "Nyet." So we were winning the war, but we were not allowed to put the 200,000 troops in. The rule for war is you get there fustest with the mostest, so that the enemy knows you really mean business. But Dean Rusk and McNamara came up with the philosophy of graduated response. So they allowed us to only put in 43,000. Hanoi said, "We'll see the 43 and raise you 50. You know, always leaving the initiative up to the enemy as to how much force was going to be put in. Well, we were still winning the war. So then they instituted what they call rules of engagement. The most foolish thing you can imagine. Rules of engagement contained in a 65-page document, but it boiled down to this. You couldn't shoot unless you were shot at. You could only return fire. And there were some zones that you couldn't even return fire, like the DMZ. See, the Marine Corps had I Corps. That's up a border of North Vietnam. And the DMZ, a demilitarized zone, a 40-mile strip in there, was nobody was supposed to be in there. Well, we knew the communists were in there. They had upward of 50,000 troops in there at one time with artillery. They were even shelling our Dong Ha headquarters, and we couldn't shoot back because it's in the DMZ. Now, I had to brief my three regimental commanders, and each regiment had three battalions, and each battalion three company commanders, and each of those organizations have a sergeant's major, you know, old zebra sleeve. It's one of the highest rank in the enlisted ranks. And so I had to assemble those at our headquarters and brief them on the new rules of engagement in 1969. There was a Sergeant Major Carlson there that had served with me in Korea when he was a three-striper and I was a captain. And when we finished, everybody was dumbfounded. The three colonels, the regimental commanders, and the whole herd of lieutenant colonels, battalion, and so forth. They just couldn't believe it. They told me later, said, "We thought you were pulling some crude joke on us." But Sergeant Major Carlson stood up and he said, "Colonel Wilson, this is your third war. It's my second war. And I believe it's been my experience, and it probably has been yours, if you wait until the enemy shoots and he hits you between the eyes, it blurs your vision. I confirmed that that had been my experience. Well, that's just how stupid the rules of engagement were. Graduated response, rules of engagement were going to sense that we would lose the war. Well, how was the lower war lost? The war was lost in 1975 when Senators Kennedy, McGovern, Church, By, Javits, and Fulbright sponsored a bill which was passed which stopped any further expenditure of appropriated funds in Southeast Asia, and it collapsed. Have you heard that lately? Central America, no more aid to the Contras. They did the same thing to Chiang Kai-shek when he was fighting the communists in China, cut off his aid. See, we helped the communists all along. I mean Kennedy, McGovern, Church, By, Javits, Fulbright. They are directly responsible for the death of at least 8 million people since then that the communists have killed. And do you hear anybody saying anything about it? Oh, no. You probably even never knew it. Again, I'd encourage you to see the movie The Killing Field, of what happened in Cambodia when they killed over 4 million people. There were 250,000 people killed in the whole Vietnam War. Approximately 3 million South Vietnamese were killed after we abandoned them. Lenin said that would happen in the United States. He said, when we conquer the United States, we will have to liquidate two-thirds of the population because the roots of capitalism run deep indeed. So you can fight and save at least half our people, or surrender and lose two-thirds. What's your choice? If you want to be red, you'll be dead too. The biggest defeat of the North Vietnamese Army, NVA, was the Tet Offensive, 1968. In violation of their own philosophies, they started a massive attack. That's a violation of all the principles of guerrilla warfare. But they were so confident that they could win, they believed their own propaganda and the propaganda of Kennedy and Fulbright and McGovern, pamphlets that they had been dropping on our troops, that why are you here? Your government does not support you. And they'd quote Kennedy, McGovern, and Fulbright. We begin to call him half-bright. But Rhodes Scholar, very smart man. Anyone as a Rhodes Scholar has been through the training school for conspirators. And if he's from Columbia University in New York, he's highly suspect. Yale, Harvard, and Princeton are good runners-up. Did you know in the Tet Offensive 1968 that the North Vietnamese Army lost 80,000 troops killed in action? From a country with 20 million people, that's like the United States losing 800,000 troops. See, we have about 200 million people. They had 20 million people. That killed their army. They had nothing left. So guess what? Let's negotiate. Remember what Lenin said? Negotiations is the means of gaining the best possible position for continued war. Treaties are like pie crust. They're made to be broken. Concessions do not mean peace with the capitalist. It means war on a different plane. I think you ought to educate your congressmen and senators. Most of them are old enough to have lived some of this history. And Lenin made it very clear that we only have peace when we have worldwide communism. Well, how were we going over in Vietnam on the program of stopping communist aggression, creating a South Vietnamese army capable of defending itself against North Vietnam, and a government politically stable, an economy sound and functioning. Well, we were actually building a whole new nation. In fact, there were such massive buildings of roads, hydroelectric dams, irrigation projects, all being done by Army engineers, Navy CBs, and Bechtel Corporation, of course. Interesting, 1965, there were only two seaports in all of Vietnam. 1970, there were eight. Cameron Bay, the most beautiful port you can imagine, and today it's the home port for the Soviet Pacific Fleet. As Peter told you, they're supplying the rebels of the communists in Philippines from Cameron Bay. Jet airports, there were only three in 1965. 1970, there were 14. Da Nang was a beautiful airport. Airfields, there were only 20 total, but by 1970, there were 89, possibly 90. This was most striking. In 1965, there were only 400,000 full-time students in all of Vietnam, but in 1970, after 5 years of so-called war, there were over 4 million full-time students in South Vietnam. The number of hospitals had increased tenfold over. And the CBs had paved so many roads, they had a little sign, "We thought we came to save it, not pave it." All of that. And we gave it to the communists. Every permanent building that we built in that time had to fulfill two purposes. Had to fulfill an immediate military need, but it also had to be convertible to a peace operation. Atlas Tire, we built a beautiful plant for them in the maintenance of aircraft, but it was already scheduled to be a tire factory for the Atlas Tire Company, and they actually paid for a portion of the construction. That's all in the hands of the communists now. And they have the gall to come and ask us for reparations for tearing up South Vietnam. We even left them helicopters and tanks and all of that, because when Kennedy, McGovern, Church, Biot, Javits, and Fulbright cut off the funds, they had no gas to get them out. You heard during the Vietnam War, some of you maybe don't remember this, but I did. I heard it almost every night on the news, these commentators saying, "Not one rice paddy in Vietnam is worth the life of one American soldier." Boy, anybody would say that would be the same mentality and understanding that they would say that the American Revolution was fought over a boatload of tea in Boston. The communists see the world as a whole package. We can't even see Vietnam as a part of their world package. See, they have a plan. All we do is react. Did you know that ever since when we had a War Department, we never lost a war? But ever since we've gotten a Defense Department, we've never won one? Anybody ever watch a football game? You don't win games being on the defense. You have to carry the ball. That may be offensive to some of you, but it's a fact. Well, Vietnam fell, proving the point that we can't win these wars of national liberation. No, we can't and never will with the people that are in the State Department, the Congress, and the Senate now. That's the reason it's important that you get off it and get with it and get them out. General Giap, head of the North Vietnamese Army, and the current Secretary of International Secretary or Foreign Affairs Secretary of North Vietnam, no less than 3 years ago, said, "We won the war in Paris and Washington, D.C." They defeated the French in Paris. They defeated the Americans in Washington, D.C. and the news media. President Ford, in his last State of the Union address, said this, Our failure in Southeast Asia lies right here in the halls of Congress. President Reagan echoed the same thing. Senator Goldwater recently said, when somebody said, oh, we don't want another Vietnam in Central America. And he said, the tragedy of Vietnam is we would not allow the military to win. Pat Robertson says, and there's a tape back there, I'd encourage each of you to pick it up, and it says tape 35 minutes of what I would do if I were president. And he said that these wars of national liberation are very simple to win. You arm the resistance forces free of charge, and if they can't win, then we get in, win, and get out. I could win, I could settle the whole thing in Nicaragua and Central America after participating in three wars on three different levels, because there's different ranks in each one of them, with one Marine division, 30,000 Marines, with supporting naval and air power, and I could do it with killing a fraction of the people that are going to be killed the way it's doing now. Very simple. Did you know that the Sandinistas only control about 20% of Nicaragua? They only hold the cities. Very simple. I'd put the indigenous personnel, the freedom fighters, in charge of taking of guarding the cities that we would take, and we'd take city after city after city. Be done in about 6 months, be all over. Cost about $200 million. Very few lives would be lost. Of course, you'd blockade. You wouldn't allow any supplies to come in a waiting period. Well, I don't need to go into the tactics. I'd like to hit a few points here to show you how this thing is going. Somebody is always upset with all the high casualty rates. Like I have this newsman. Interesting that when a communist take over a country, they kick all the foreign newsmen out. That's the reason you never heard about what's going on in Cambodia and South Vietnam, because they know they're going through that liquidation period and they have to get them out so it'll never be reported. I don't think they'd even report it if they even were through there. And the communist actually stated that in the world context, the democracies would never take the action necessary to win a war of national liberation. And of course, Vietnam proved that. Plus, it'll keep us out of any other operations going on down there. And as I've pointed out, daydreams are no answer to the communist nightmare. By the way, I'm reading extracts from a speech that I gave to the Washington, D.C., the Chevy Chase Bethesda Rotary Club in 1968, and it's the same speech. I didn't have to change a single word that I gave to the Chamber of Commerce in Houston in 1971 when I came back from Vietnam. And it's still true today. And we hear about casualties, if I can find them. Troop supplies. It's very interesting that in Vietnam, the Koreans sent 50,000 troops to help us. And in proportion to their 20 million population, that's like the United States sending 500,000. Also, as I pointed out, South Africa offered to send help. We rejected it. Taiwan offered to send help. We rejected it because we had that unfortunate experience in Korea, that the North Vietnamese Army, when they said they should stop at the 38th parallel, they didn't stop at the 38th parallel. They kept going because it was their country and they were going to take it back. Knowledge of the communist deceit will certainly defeat them. There's some excellent books, Masters of Deceit by J. Edgar Hoover, What We Must Know About Communism by the Overstreets, and You Can Trust the Communist to Be Communist by Dr. Swores, and a whole bunch more. Troop casualties, this is what I want to put in the line. And most people, when you hear of a casualty, you think somebody's dead, don't you? Well, let's put it in perspective. During the peak time of American losses in Vietnam, 1966 to 1968, only about one out of four of the armed forces actually in Vietnam, and remember that, only one out of four will actually see frontline duty. The rest of them are supply and logistics and behind the lines. But that wasn't all that safe either, because the communists were continually launching rockets into the populated areas and killing massive amounts of people. I know you heard about My Lai to show you how the news media will do it. Remember Lieutenant Calley and My Lai, where 102 Vietnamese communists were killed? He was court-martialed, and he was headlines for nearly 2 years. Isn't it strange you never heard about the slaughter at Hue, where the communists killed 6,000 civilians in one weekend and buried most of them in a common grave? If you'd like to find out about that, write the State Department and write for their documentation of the rape of Hue, H-U-E, Hue. That was the old capital of the old nation. You don't do that. You didn't hear about Ba Rin either. I was in country at that time, in charge of, after they had disbanded the amphibious forces, and I was in charge of coordinating about 4,000 airplanes, helicopters, and fixed wing with 80,000 troops. Very interesting assignment, a challenging assignment. And at 3 o'clock one morning, the communists pulled their usual tactic on Ba Rin. They lobbed in a bunch of rockets. All the civilians and the children all ran to their bunkers and got in their bunkers. And then the communists ran down the streets throwing hand grenades and bottles of gasoline into their bunkers and killed nearly 400 women and children, because the men were off fighting the war. I called the headquarters of the press over in Da Nang, and I contacted the on-duty representative. He was the United Press, UPI. And I said, we have an action down south. And if any of your reporters are interested in seeing what has happened, I'll have a helicopter on your LZ, your landing zone, within 45 minutes, and we'll take you there. And he said, are you talking about Ba Rin? I said, I am. He said, sorry, we don't have anyone available. They wouldn't even go look. But we sent them pictures, but it never appeared in any of the news media. Compare that with the other. By the way, that same representative, I was at the a farewell party for a General Zeiss of the Army AmeriCal Division. And this guy was pretty drunk, the UPI reporter. And so I asked him, I said, why do you characters report only the bad news out here? And he said, Colonel, and his martini breath in my face, you'll be out here 13 months and then you'll go home. I've been out here 3 years covering this war, and when I first came out here, I sent in honest reports of the wonderful work that was being done, building schools, roads, hospitals, all that stuff. It never got printed. He said, I get paid a salary, but I also get a bonus for column inch printed, and they'll only print bad news. And he said, I'd like to show you something. And he reached in his pocket and pulled out a telegram. Newsweek was offering $7,000 to anybody who could uncover another My Lai. A $7,000 bonus to find another minor problem area. And if you're interested, we can talk about My Lai further. But casualties. Only one out of four will ever serve in the front lines that gets to Vietnam. Based on the figures of 1965 through 68, deaths from all causes in combat were 19 per 1,000 troops per year. 19 per 1,000 troops per year. I dare say the highways will kill more young people than that. This compares with 43 per 1,000 in Korea, and 52 per 1,000 in World War II. When we hear casualty, we often think that somebody's dead. Nothing could be further from the truth. Let's take 100 typical wounded Marines in action and report it as a, quote, Vietnam casualty. 45 would be treated in the field and returned to duty immediately. Get a Purple Heart, return to the duty. Like old Willie said, he went back to the station and they offered him a Purple Heart, and he said, no, I just want an aspirin. I already got a Purple Heart. So 55 would be admitted to a hospital in South Vietnam. And out of that 55, 45 would be treated in a Pacific area hospital. and 27 out of that group would be returned to duty. The remaining 19 would be evacuated to the United States, and of these, 10 would require long-term treatment, 5 would return to full duty. 3 would be discharged with a disability and a pension, and 1 out of the 100 would die from wounds. That's the reason we have so many Vietnam veterans around with no legs, no arms, they stepped on landmines. But in World War II, they would have been dead. They wouldn't have survived. The helicopter made it possible to save multitudes of lives.